I do want to remind you that folks who lead us at this time are doing that as a volunteer, and I'd like you to remember to say thanks when they do that. You can help them by writing things on the board that you have as prayer requests or as praise reports. You can help them by putting your name with that so we know who it is, and that helps us record it for other purposes. Now, we've been looking at the Ten Commandments. We're coming now to the fifth of those Ten Commandments. The first one was, no other gods before me. The second, God says, no idols. The third one, don't take on the name of the Lord in vain. I think that's a better way of rendering that. Last week we talked about remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. This week we come to the fifth of those. This is in verse 7 of Exodus 20. Does it say, love your father and mother? No. Does it say, respect your father and mother? No. Does it say, obey your father and mother? No. What does it say? What an interesting word choice. Fascinated by the way words work. This is the first commandment in a second group of commandments. The first four have focused on our relationship with God. This is the first of six that focus on our relationship with other people. Jesus pointed out this is the first commandment with a promise. In fact, it's the only one in this list that has a promise associated with it. What's the promise? You'll live long in the land where the God has put you. So let's begin by talking about honor. If you look at the definition of that word, I find it fascinating. The word does not mean respect, at least in its original form, so we're told. It doesn't mean respect. It doesn't mean love. It means, this is interesting, to give weight to. Or, Bill, I apologize for this because I've got the same issues, to treat as heavy. Isn't that great? Now, some of the things that I do in my other life, some of the science that we work on gives us data, and sometimes we're looking to treat that data, work with that data, and one of the things we may do is get an average of some measurements that we've made. But much more often, what we find is we get a weighted average. And in a weighted average, we give more weight to certain of those measurements than we do to others. There's reasons that we do. There's things that you have to go through to make sure your protocols are proper and that you're doing that in the right kind of way. But that issue of giving more weight to certain things, less to others, it's that context that this word is giving. It may not be the only thing it's doing, but it's giving that. Now, we're going to come back to honor a number of times later, but let me just make sure that I see this. Is there an exemption for parents who aren't so good? Is there an exemption for parents who aren't godly? No. Is there a time limit on how long you do this? No. So we got some challenges here. Because we got to figure out how to honor our parents, even in those cases where our parents are not all that honorable. I think I've said that correctly. We got to deal with that. One of the things that we're going to find ourselves dealing with, I'm giving you a little preview of all the different places we're going to try to go, is what kind of parents are we? Are we the kind of parents that our children will find it easy to honor? And as soon as you have that thought, you're going to have another thought almost immediately behind it. What if you don't have children? What happens to you in that set of thoughts? So those are some of the things that we're going to work with. You ready?
All right. Hey, Bill, before you get going, do you think that the statement of father and mother is applicable just to biological predecessors?
We didn't go in that in our first hour. No. No. I think if you have had the experience of adopting, or if you have friends who have adopted, you understand that there are. I think the best way I ever heard it put was, some people have children some people have the privilege of choosing children. We chose you. That was what I heard an adoptive parent say to their children. I thought that was very well said. No. I think the Bible was aiming it at biological, but I think we have a sense now of a system in which adoption is something that they wouldn't have known as much about. Children who needed that would have found a place within the family with uncles or aunts or something like that, probably.
You know, and growing up in my situation, I mean, it would be applicable, say, even to, say, a mentor-type relationship, or just in general, to any relationship.
Keep your eye firmly on that, because that's one of the places I want us to go. Is that sense of a parenting relationship can have, and in some cases needs to have, a wider definition. David?
Well, I plan to be silent. I just listened for a long time.
You had told me you planned to be silent. This is great.
I'm an adopted child who, I'm going to be 49 next month. My birth mother found me 2 years ago.
Oh.
And I'm able to establish a relationship with her, and there's been some interesting dynamics between them.
I'll be very curious when all of this is over whether you think I've said something worthwhile for you to listen to. I'm going to be real curious.
Mark, follow up to that. I'm going to play the whole story. It's a great story, by the way. But I want to. I have a sister who I'm extremely close to, who was adopted. I never knew about her, and she found me. The first year of the canonical marriage, 20 years ago, she found me.
Okay. We've set the parameters now, right?
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
I'll give you my personal experience. As a child, my mom and dad taught me, and we lived in a close-knit neighborhood with a lot of kids, to respect their parents.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's sort of going into the territory Chuck was moving into a little while back. Does honoring your parents change from when you're young to when you're old?
It's different.
Yes. Absolutely and without question, yes. The Bible makes a big distinction, and I need to make sure you see that distinction. Okay? Ready to go? We're going to start in Genesis. Genesis 22:24. If you have to look there, that's great. But think about it. Given the subject that we're talking about this morning, what's the verse I'm almost certainly going to be talking about? For this reason, a man will leave. Not leave his wife. Come on, guys. Leave his father and mother and... What's the word in King James?
Cleave
to his wife. Remember that phrase? I have always been bothered by that phrase. I have always, always been bothered by that phrase because I know what a cleaver is. What's a cleaver? That's what divides things in two. What does the word cleave mean? Bring together. English is insane. Try learning English when you haven't had English as the first language. This is hard. There was a baker who was trying to speed up his process of slicing loaves of bread. And he said one day, I'm the luckiest man in town, for I've just found a four-loaf cleaver. Think it through. You'll get it. It's coming. Thank you. Four, loaf, cleaver, lucky. Okay. Okay. Sydney. Genesis 2:24. Genesis 2.
Yeah, he said
2:24.
Yeah.
Genesis 2:24, right?
Yes.
Okay. When do you leave your mother and father in the sense of Genesis 2:24? When do you do that? When you get married? When you're old enough to get married? Keep going, guys. Some of your parents, this is an important thing for you. I'm looking at the Haglers. Financial independent. where you can care for yourself and support yourself. Okay? Roughly what age is that? Used to be 18. Maybe 21 or 22. Nowadays, that's not so clear. And that's saying something not so good about our country.
Right.
Sorry about this. Tough. You're the kid in the room.
It was a great day to show up.
Yeah, it was a great day. You get to pick up what we say when you're not here. Separate from parents. Take responsibilities for the life you leave. What if you're not married? What if you're not old enough to get married? What if you're not financially independent? You're still dependent on your parents. What if you're in those circumstances? What then? Then you're still under your parents' authority. I'm going to use the word children for one, even if the age passes 18 by a bit. I'm going to use adult for the other. And the Bible makes a difference between those two. Time out. I think I saw a hand waving somewhere, and I want to make sure I honored that before I go ahead. There wasn't one. There was one. Paul's trying to decide whether he really did raise his hand.
Well, if we pass the moment, and it probably doesn't belong here, it sounds like politics, but I wondered about the new health care where they'll now you can still be under your parents' medical plan.
Well, yeah, pretend I'm standing on my sign. I think if health insurance was a lot more like car insurance, it would be a whole lot more wise. You have it however you get it. You go get grouped with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people rather than 5 here and 10 here and 35 there. The whole thing is insane. I don't know if it's going to be any better if that stays in, but the whole thing is insane. Let's go back to this for a minute. In the Old Testament, there are some books that are obviously connected to each other. The pastor in the sermon that I heard this morning talked about a passage out of 2 Chronicles. Guess what book goes along with that?
1 Chronicles.
This is easy. You getting the idea? 2 Kings would go with 1 Kings, right? It's less obvious that Ezra goes with Nehemiah. But they really do. If you go see what the Jewish scholars call those, they call those First Ezra and Second Ezra. Okay? If you go to the New Testament, it's pretty easy to see First and Second Corinthians. Right? Pretty easy to see First and Second Timothy or First and Second Thessalonians. It's less easy to see a couple of other pairings. One of those pairings is Galatians and Romans. Paul's letters are listed in the Bible in order of size, bigger first, smaller later. Galatians was written first about a specific problem in a specific place. And then Romans was written about the same problem, but more thoughtfully, a little bit more reflectively, and therefore a bigger book. You ought to read Galatians before you read Romans, because Galatians will prepare you for Romans. In that same spirit, Colossians and Ephesians have that relationship. Colossians was an immediate book. Ephesians a bit more reflective. So, I'm going to take you into Colossians and Ephesians, and you're going to see almost the same verse. And that's not surprising, because those are connected verses. They're not connected like 1 and 2 Chronicles were. You see these things in 1 and 2 Chronicles, 1 Chronicles, and then you continue the story in 2 Chronicles. These are not sequential, they're overlaid. So, let's go to Colossians first. If you'll go to Colossians 3:20. Colossians 3:20. Let me just check and make sure we're at the right place. Yeah. Let me first make sure you see the context, because this is going to matter later. In the verses 18 and 19, who is the focus of these two verses? Wives and husbands. In verse 20 and 21, who's the focus? Parents and children. In verse 22,
slaves and masters.
Okay. And chapter 4, verse 1 is the second half of that, right? Who has the power in the relationship of master and slave?
Master.
Who has the power in parents and children?
Parents.
Who has the power in husband and wife in that time?
Husbands,
right?
Why
did
you say in that time, Bill?
Because I'm trying to make sure that anyone who might have some crude objection would have an answer before they spoke. Obviously, I failed. Okay, so we're looking at verse 20, which is the verse that's addressed to the weaker side of the relationship first. We're only looking at 20. What does it say children are to do? Mine says, children, be obedient to your parents always. Yours says, obey your parents in everything. Is that the way yours is worded? Okay. But there's a comma, and then the verse ends with something very interesting. What does it say? That behavior, that conduct pleases the Lord. Are you okay so far? All right. What are we going to find in Ephesians? Pretty much the same verse. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 1. If you take a look at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 and 22 and 23, you'll see the wives and husbands part. If you look at chapter 6, verse 1 and verse 2 and verse 3 and verse 4, you'll see the parents and children part. If you look at verse 5 through 9, you'll see the slaves and masters part. Parallel to those. A little bit more text here. What does chapter 6, verse 1 say? The front end says?
Children,
obey your parents. Same thing. In the Lord. Okay. But then it's got a comma. And instead of saying, because this pleases God, what does it say this time? Because it's the right thing to do. Okay? Children honor their parents with obedience and respect. Adults honor their parents with what? Is it still obedience? No, it's not. Because you're independent now. I don't believe children are called on to obey. Children and adults are called on to honor. And we're trying to explore what that means. It's not obedience anymore, because that would be you're still under the parents' authority and all that sort of stuff. What it's saying is something different, and I'm inviting you to think what that might be. Here's my list just in the interest of time. Parents, adult children, honor their parents with concern. They honor their parents with attention. They honor their parents with care and support when it's needed. And they honor their parents with respect. Now, I will admit we've already put on the table, not all parents are good parents and some are awful. And how you manage that, that's something we're going to have to explore specifically a little bit later. Okay? When you honor parents, this is Meyer's opinion now. When you honor parents, you are honoring them less for who they are and more for what they are. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. When God created, He created human institutions too. That too was an also. He created human institutions also. The first institution He created was the family. The church was created much later. What was the purpose of the family?
Bring up the children in the way of the Lord.
To bring up the children. What does that mean?
Teach.
It's very interesting that from three sides of the room came that word teach. I think you're absolutely right. That'd be pretty high on my list too. The purpose of a family was to be a place in which children were born and raised. Adoption would be a little bit of a stretch and a twist on this piece. The central place of acceptance, the place where we would be cared for and nurtured. I think that's the best word I can possibly use. The place where we were supposed to learn right from wrong. Our teachers were supposed to be our parents. Our caregivers were supposed to be our parents. Our encouragers were supposed to be our parents. Our guides, our counselors were supposed to be our parents. And our response was to be, as children, our response was to be obedience to their instructions and submitting to their authority. I got three things for you to look at first. One of these I'm really, really pulling something out of context. The context is totally different, but there's a piece in here that is important. It's in 1 Corinthians 14:33. That's the front end. It's also in 1 Corinthians 14:40. It's sort of a bookend, and what's in the middle is totally different from this. And this is the place to pause and make sure I've said this. I have been influenced by a number of folks as I've tried to prepare these lessons way back when I taught them the first time around. David Jeremiah has a series on this kind of thing. Erwin Lutzer from Days Gone By has one. Eddie Young out of Houston has some, and lots of other commentaries and stuff like that. But the thing that I found the most influential was a guy named Lon Solomon, who's pastor of McLean Bible Church up in Northern Virginia. And his sermons are online, and he had a whole series on this, and I've listened to those. And I'm pulling out some of the things that I'm pulling out. Lon Solomon said them first, and I want to acknowledge that. I encourage you, if you want to read a little bit more, read some of the things he's saying. It's not the same. I'm putting some other pieces in with it, but a lot of what I've got is informed by that.
Chapter was that? I didn't hear you.
1 Corinthians 14. That's because you're sitting way back there and not way up here. It's harder for them. Anyway, 1 Corinthians 14, verse 33 and verse 40 sort of give bookends to it. And here's what it says. God is not a God of disorder. He is a God of peace and order. God's design, Lon Solomon pulled this idea out. The idea was in churches and turmoil and churches and all that. But he pulled this idea out to say God's design for the family was what? For parents to exercise authority over the children and for children to be responsive to that authority. That was his design. And that their response to the parental authority was the way that children honored their parents. If there are bad parents, you've got some problems with that, but that was God's ideal. That was God's plan for the family. Now, I do want you to turn to Psalm 127. Find Psalm 127. Psalm 127. A couple of times in here, you will see structure that if you were a language professor, you would say, you have a verse that divides in half, and the first half of the verse says something, and then the second half of the verse amplifies or fine-tunes or offers an alternative, or one's a positive and one's a negative. Remembering that idea, look at verse 1. Psalm 127, verse 1. Read the first thought. It's roughly the first half of the verse. What does it say?
Unless God is building,
it says a house, right?
I think the home is better.
And what's happening? The writer is making a metaphor and an analogy. If you don't know me very well, you may not know this. I live on analogies and metaphors. When I'm trying to teach chemistry, I'm talking about going to the prom, which I didn't get to do. But they did. And I used that. And I talk about driving on highways in Texas, and I talk about some of the things I did when I was in the Army. And all these things are metaphors and analogies and parallels. That's what this guy's doing. If God isn't building a family, if God isn't building a house, those who build the house are building in vain. The picture is building a house, but the deeper meaning is building a family. What's the second half? Do you notice how much powerful, how much more powerful this is? But not without the family being first. The strength of a city is on the strength of its families. Look around you. Richmond and every other city in the U.S. is in trouble because families are not strong anymore. What does it say in the second half of the verse? If God doesn't build a city, those who guard its walls are doing so in vain. Keep going. In vain you get up earlier. In vain you put off going to bed. In vain you sweat to make a living, because it is God who provides for His beloved as they sleep. Verse 3 should be gender inclusive. And it is if you read it right. Sons are a birthright from the Lord. What's the second line? Children. That suddenly includes sons and daughters. Children are a reward from him. Like arrows in a warrior's hands are the sons you father when you're young. How blessed is the man who has filled his quiver with them. There's a great parallel of metaphor. In disputes with his enemies at the city gate, he will not be... My translation uses the word worsted. I thought that's what you did to wool, so I need your translation there. Will not be put to shame. When the families work and families are strong, God's values are passed from generation to generation and things remain good and strong. When families break down, nations are in trouble. Now, just to make sure of this, I want to take you to Luke chapter 2. Most everybody in here, I think, will know Luke chapter 2, verse 52. What does Luke chapter 2, verse 52 say?
Jesus grew.
King James said Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men. Right? And it'll be roughly that. I want you to back up one verse and look at verse 51. Before you do, let me remind you. Jesus had been going on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem with his family, and when they turned to go home, he wasn't there, but they didn't realize it for 3 days. They went back, searched and searched. When they finally found him, this is very interesting in this context, he said to them, "Didn't you know where to look? You should have known I was going to be in my father's house." Joseph didn't have a house there. Who did? God did. He was in the temple. But now, on their way back home, the writer gives you verse 51. What does verse 51 say? Jesus went back with them and
was obedient.
Okay, I need all the different words. Was obedient, yours says. Okay, is there another translation? Was subject. Submissive to them. Lived under their authority, I think is the way mine gives it.
Lived obediently.
That's children. That's children. Okay? Is there an exception for parents who are bad? Just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. No. There are some parents that are better than others. There are some teachers that are better than others. There are governors that are better than others. There's presidents that are better than others. There's coaches that are better than others. And the list goes on and on and on. So, what happens then? Lon Solomon went to the craziest place. He takes you, and I'm going to take you to 1 Peter chapter 2. Now, 1 Peter chapter 2, we're back in almost the same context that you were in Colossians and in Ephesians. Remember what it was. In Colossians and Ephesians, there were three pairings that you were looking at. What was the first one?
Husbands
with wives. We were looking at the middle one, which was parents and children. And now we're going to go to the third one, which is masters and slaves. Now, they usually did it with the weaker one first. Wives first, then husbands. Children first, then parents. And all we've looked at so far there is children. We're going to go back a little bit later and look at the other one. He takes you to 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 18. 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 18. Okay? Now, he admits in this context, he's picking it up from the slave master part and applying it to the parent-children part. Okay? And I'm going to do that too because I think he's right. Look what it says. Slaves should what?
Submit.
Yours says submit, mine says obey. Obey your masters respectfully, mine says. With all respect, yours says, Paul. And then it's got a comma, and in my translation it says, not only those who are kind and reasonable. What does yours say? Just that far. What does yours have for those two words? Because there's about eight words that come together.
Good and considerate.
Good and considerate. Mine says kind and reasonable.
Gentle.
Any other word? Okay, we've got that set of words. Not only those, but also those who are, what's the word here? Overbearing, harsh, cruel, unreasonable,
harsh and unjust.
Mine says difficult to please. And there hangs a tale.
Bill's quite a teacher.
There hangs a tale.
Professors.
Bill, does your verse end up with should? Should be
slaves, comma, you should obey your master's respect. It doesn't have that as the first word, but it has that early on.
Servants, be submissive.
Yours is more
command.
Mine says must accept.
This is a kind and reasonable command in my version, huh?
I have a question.
Yeah.
All right, my footnote says Christian slaves. All right, children are being raised to know God. But if you adjust that to parents and children, this is the environment where they are to be learning about God. So I work in a school system where there are a lot of children who have dysfunctional families, and they become damaged themselves. So help me with that.
Mm-hmm. Because of parents being abusive or whatever.
Yes.
Before we finish today, I'm going to make a stab, which probably is a poorly chosen word, at addressing some of that. I don't know that I'm going to do all of that, but I'll do some. Let me go ahead with just a minute, because I want to tell you a little story, and maybe it will help you understand a little bit more of what drives me. I had occasion within the last 2 weeks to check and make sure that I hadn't misremembered this. In my back box, I have my grade reports from when I started school all the way through high school. They're all there. And they're there for a reason. I don't want to throw them away. And I don't want to throw them away because in eighth grade, I got the best report I had ever gotten in my life. Now, some of you, not many, are old enough to remember when the scale wasn't A, B, C, D, but it was instead E, which stood for?
Excellent.
Excellent. That was excellent that you knew that E stood for. Okay. What was the next letter?
Yes.
Which stood for?
Satisfactory.
Good. James, you're getting into this.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't save my report cards, though.
Yeah. And what was the third level? U for?
Unsatisfactory.
Okay. I got the best report I had ever gotten in my life. Everything pretty much was E plus or E. And it was leaning much more toward E plus than to E. I had one grade that wasn't. That was phys ed, which I thought I'd get a pass on that one. Right, Bill? I took that to my father. My father signed it. And above or below his name, above, I think, was a place that said comment. Down here it said sign, and up here it said comment. On the line for comment, my father wrote, and I quote, shows room for improvement. It hurt then, and it still hurts now. When I was reviewing these, to my horror, I discovered something I had not seen before. My mother wrote the same thing on an almost as good report 2 years before. I would believe it of my father. I didn't believe it of my mom, but there it was. Now, let me take you a little further, just again so you can understand something of what drives me. I was a chemistry major in college. My teacher was my father. I took physical chemistry from my father. And on the second test of the first semester, I got a test back. How old are you? Do you know the ads for Ivory soap? Ivory soap is how pure?
99.99.
At the top of the first page was 99 1/44 100ths. And not a mark on the test. I took it into my father and I said, what's this? And he said, and I quote, just because I couldn't find anything wrong with it doesn't mean that there wasn't something wrong with it. Now, let me quickly tell you, my father was a good dad. My mom was an excellent mom. My dad was a good father. He thought this would encourage me towards better stuff. And in a perverse way, he was right. But I don't think it was the wisest thing to do. Did you catch the phrase in my translation? Not just to those who are kind and reasonable, but also to those who are difficult to please. Okay? little while ago you said, does this apply to teachers? It haunts me to think I may do that to one of my students. I have to correct them. I have to show them what's wrong. I have to do that. My daughter taught me 10 years ago to quit using a red pen. I now use green because it's gentler. That's true. Okay? There are some parents who are difficult to please. There are some who are harsh. There are some who are outright unreasonable. And there are some for whom there are no words that you can use that describe the depth of what they're doing to their kids. And yet we are told to honor our parents. We got a little problem to work through here, and we don't have too much time, so make it quick.
Okay, just an interesting question, Bill. Did you ever do this on other students' papers?
No. Not to my knowledge.
Yeah. Might I also say, in defense of your father, though he may have been slightly one end of the spectrum, the other end of being too loose can be far worse. Yeah.
And I'm fully aware of that. I'm fully aware of that. My dad was a good father. He was a good father. There were places here and there that I think he wasn't as good as he could be. And I'm using that because there are much harder things some of you have probably experienced, and I don't want to make light of those things, but I also don't want to bring them out. They're too painful. Okay?
Bill, I think people are able to give birth, to have children, but sometimes they can't parent. I don't know what the difference is. You know, you just give birth physically. Parenting is a different thing.
Okay, don't forget what 1 Peter 2:18 is saying. What does it say? Whichever way, it's still respond to them as though it's an honoring thing. That's a tightrope to walk. I want to help you now by showing you one more thing. What happens if they're leading you in ways that take you away from God? Do you still have to obey if you're a child? Lon Solomon took you to Acts 5, which is a very, very different place. Again, the context is different, but I think the point is exactly right. Jesus has died and has been resurrected and has ascended. The disciples are now on their own and they're preaching. They get called in by the authorities and told to quit. They go back out, they start preaching again, they get called in again. Chapter 5 of Acts, verse 27. When they had brought them in to face the Sanhedrin, the high priest demanded an explanation. "We gave you a strong warning," he said. "Don't preach in this name. And what have you done? You have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you seem determined to fix the guilt for this man's death on us." In reply, Peter and the apostles said, quote, what does it say? We must obey God rather than men. I don't think that's strong enough. My translation this time captures it. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does. Here's what it said. Obedience to God comes before obedience to men. That says it. If that conflict comes, hopefully the children know enough about God that they'll say, okay, no, not there. All right, we got about 5 minutes. Let's see what we can do. In honor of you, I want to try to say some of these things, but also I want to try to say them in the time limit we have. So let me just run through a few of these for you. If we are old enough not to be required to obey our parents anymore, what does honoring my parents mean? So here are some items. This gets harder and harder if your parents are not good parents. Treat them with ongoing esteem, reverence, affection, and respect, and take actions regularly to put those attitudes into practice. Number two, stay in touch. Listen to them and consider seriously what they say. Value their wisdom. Share family time with them. Support them as you can when they need you to do so. Take the opportunity regularly to tell them how much you appreciate them, love them, and respect them. With some parents, that may be very difficult to do. And we're going to come to what do you do in that case. Very quickly, and just to put this in the context, why should I do this? Number one, because in most cases, or at least in many cases, they've earned it. They deserve it. Most of us have parents who were good, if not very good. And a few were lucky enough to have excellent ones. your life and your health has come because they cared for you when you were too young to care for yourself. But just in case that's not enough, go back to Ephesians and Colossians. What did it say? Because it pleases God and because it's the right thing to do. And then finally, go back to Exodus. Jesus pointed this out because God promised good things come when you do this. If we honor our parents, in most cases, their guidance will lead us into safe, productive, and satisfying lives. Little tidbit here for some in the audience. If how a person treats his or her parents is a pretty good measure of what sort of person that is. Young people contemplating marriage would do well to examine how their potential intended treats his or her parents. There's a signal there for you of what your married life might be like. You might also take a look at how the parents of your intended treat each other. That's another signal, because that's what they've learned and seen. Now, let me turn the table upside down. What are we like as parents? What are we like as parents? We've taken the view so far, we're children or we're adult children and we're looking towards our parents. Let's look the other way. Are we acting as parents in a way that invites, that makes it easy for our children to honor us? If you go back to Ephesians, we read verse 1, right? If you keep reading, you hear what God says to the parents. If you go to Colossians 3:20, and then you go to 3:21 or 22 or 23, somewhere in there, God talks to parents. What does he say in those two places? If you don't know, go look. Don't exasperate, provoke your children to anger, to wrath. Don't. One translation this morning said, don't nag them. And there was another word. Some of you, if you have that translation, bring it out. It was really interesting. Don't drive your children to resentment, but instead bring them up. King James says, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I like the translation that says, bring them up with correction and advice inspired by the Lord. I think that's the best phrase. In Colossians it says, don't irritate them or they will lose heart. And another translation says, their spirits will be crushed. I think that's maybe what you were talking about with the children you're working with. So, how do we do that? We do that by getting serious about living genuine, authentic Christian lives in our homes. Biblically obedient, spiritually sensitive, and consistent in our homes with our faith walk. Lon Solomon said this sentence, and it hit me as probably the most powerful sentence he said in this whole lesson. Children can spot a phony a mile away, and we don't live a mile away from them. If we act abusively toward our family, if we gossip and backstab others in the home, if we watch things on TV or read things in books, magazines that we shouldn't be reading, if our attitudes and actions at church are different from our attitudes and actions in conflict with those actions at home, we make it tough for our kids to honor us. Most of us are going to struggle with this somewhere and somehow. What do we do when we fall short? We confess. We say to our children, we messed up. Have you seen the ads for drugs that have been running on television? What do you do if you took drugs when you were in college and now you've got children? You don't want them to do that. Those ads are very interesting. They say, confess to your children, we did it, and it was the worst thing or bad thing to have done. It put us in peril. Maybe we made it through that, but not everybody did. Very interesting. If we honestly confront our own flaws and failings to our children, to our spouses, to our family members, ask them to pray for us and do the best we can to make amends for what we've done wrong or what we failed to do, then we have a chance. But remember, we can't do this alone. In our own power, we don't have the power to do this very well. We're going to have God working with us. And that's where Ephesians comes back and says, be filled with the Spirit. Okay, what if you don't have children? What now? You can become surrogate parents or surrogate grandparents for children around you. Next door to us for 20 years in the house we lived in off of Robius Road was a couple by the name of Nelson and Ethel Langan. They're gone now. He was retired from the Coca-Cola Bottling Company. and he lived next door to us. He became, and his wife became, grandparents to our children. I don't think there was a day that went by for 20 years that they didn't do something tangible to acknowledge our children, to encourage our children, to ask them about how things were going for them. My parents were 400 miles away. Barbara's were 1,300 miles away. These guys took on our kids. Those of you who work in the children's area in this church, I don't know how I can honor you enough. Roland, I think about you in this context this morning. Those of you who affect little children at that point, who give them some alternatives in some cases, that's a good thing. Matthew and a couple of other places in the Gospels, Jesus says it was better for somebody to have a millstone hung around their neck and be caught, cast into the depths of the sea than to have harmed a little one that God loves. Last thing, what happens if you had bad parents? What do you do then? How do I honor parents that were so awful to me? And some of you have had this experience. You may have to create space for a time or even forever, but you can still honor them. If you visit their city, maybe you don't visit them in their home, but maybe you can talk to them in a hotel lobby someplace. Maybe you can phone, or maybe you can write. But you can always pray for them. Pray that they will see the light, see God's light and come out of this. And much more importantly, you can break the cycle. And I don't know if I heard him say anything more important. By living a life that breaks the cycle, you honor your parents, even if you never talk to your parents. By being a different person to your own kids or to the kids of other parents, you break that cycle. Now, that's all I have time for. I hope some of this will give you something to think about this week. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this subject. We thank you for the institution of the family that you have provided for human beings by providing families. Some of us have a sense that families are under attack and that our country is in peril because of that. It's not clear what to do and it's not clear how to do it. So we pray for your guidance and your wisdom to come to all those who wrestle with these questions. I pray if we are parents that you will work with us to become better parents. If we still have parents alive, show us ways in which we can be honoring of them. And teach us that all around us are people who might be surrogate children or surrogate parents, that by working with and working with them, we can honor our own parents and we can practice things that maybe will help those children in ways that we didn't help our own. All this we pray in your Son's name. Amen.